Welcome to Botches Off-Road. Join us as we talk about everything from gear reviews to trail stories, tent camping to rock landing, and all things to do with the outdoors. Today's just kind of a quick and dirty, another recap, if you will, about the meeting for Marblehead up in Drummond Island. We've got Derek VS Pro from Mitten State Tours and Joe Yamber. Do you want to be from Mitten State Tours? Are you from something else? Okay. Joe Yamber from Mitten State Tours. They've got a lot of background about the whole Marblehead situation, and they've got some pretty interesting takes that will really add to your knowledge on it. So, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Alex. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So, I probably should have brushed up on what we talked about when I was on with Duncan, but what was your take on the meeting? Do you feel like things will change, or do you think it's just going to be more of the same?
Derek, do you want to go
first? I'll let you go first, Joe. So no, take it away. I missed the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I was on the whole time until like the very end where I had to get going for work, but I think I barely missed any of it. It seemed like they were wrapping up. But so at first, they were trying to like not even talk about it, and then they were talking about their plans and enhancements, and then I chimed in also. That's what you call it. And then that kind of spiraled into the Marblehead discussion. Now there were two ladies. I think one of them was Christy, and I can't remember the other one's name, but Christy seemed to be the one who was the most knowledgeable on the events that actually took place. And she had mentioned that they knew that they were going back there with heavy equipment. Huh?
Christy and Amy.
Amy, okay. So Christy had mentioned that she knew they were going back with heavy equipment to move boulders in front of the steps. Now, she had mentioned that they knew that the mini steps were going to be demolished to get the equipment up there. And I had brought up, well, if you look at the path that they cleared in order to get the equipment down on the actual steps of Marblehead, the entirety of the mini steps didn't need to be demolished. It was unnecessary.
Right.
So then they claimed they had no knowledge of the steps being taken away. But here's where, and I didn't think of it at the time, you know, that hindsight's 2020, but how did they know, like they knew the mini steps, right, had to be demolished to get equipment. How did they not know that the actual steps were going to have to be addressed as well if the mini steps had to be done?
Right.
Like how.
The steps are way bigger than the mini steps.
How did they plan on getting the equipment down if they knew the mini steps are a problem? How are the big steps not going to be a problem? So they're claiming that they've been blindsided and all this stuff and screwed over by the DNR. But when you think about it, they signed off on the mini steps being taken away. How did they not know that the big steps were going to be a problem too? And then there was another guy in there. I can't remember his name. I can't remember any of their names. But he kind of was in charge of it for a while. And then it seemed like he retired and kind of handed it off, but he's still active enough. And he claimed he had no knowledge of the mini steps either. He said they weren't supposed to be touched. And then that's when I pointed out, well, wait a minute, Christy said 10 minutes ago that they were. So to me, it seems like there was a lot of, they know more than they're saying.
Yeah,
and I don't see how you could have possibly known about the mini steps and not the big steps at the same time. It makes no sense. So going forward,
if you can't get up the mini steps, you're not getting down the big steps.
Yeah. So going forward, it sounds like they want to have a more open discussion about these types of things, and because they opened themselves into a huge can of worms, and the backlash and everything that they've received from the off-road community is well deserved, in my opinion. Yeah, sure, the DNR is the one that actually went back there with the equipment and said, hey, do X, Y, and Z, but I don't know. They were the ones that requested the boulders get placed in front of the cliff so people can't drive down there. And I mean, maybe they didn't know like what that actually entailed, but if you're the president of the Drummond Island Off-Road Club and you know that they're going back there with heavy equipment and they have to deal with obstacles, wouldn't you be back there to watch and have a say in what they do? You're supposed to be back there.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be back to protect these trails and manage them. Yet you just don't have, you have zero cares about them going back there unsupervised with a bulldozer. It's just insane to me. Anyway, I'll let Derek go on from that.
I'd add some background on that. Actually, when we talk about the Drummond Island Off-Road Club, there is no such thing currently as the Drummond Island Off-Road Club. The Drummond Island Off-Road Club is a shell of a club. It's operated by the Drummond Island Tourism Association. It's completely and wholly controlled by Drummond Island Tourism Association, or DITA. Now, DITA is not made up of off-road enthusiasts. And that was pretty obvious during the meeting. So we had conversations with them during the meeting where it became very apparent they're well out of their depth. They do not understand the off-road community. And essentially they're going off of their trail master, whoever's helping with these grants, is a snowmobile groomer who operates the groomer up there. Yes, he drives on the trails, but it doesn't seem like he's an actual enthusiast. It just seems like he's an island enthusiast, and there just happens to be trails and snowmobile trails there. So my opinion of the group right now is they're hopelessly they're hopelessly kind of outmatched by what they, you know, what their mission should be. They're not off-road enthusiasts. They don't understand the community. They don't know who the community is, right? And they don't have the first idea of who to reach out to or how to respond to, you know, these specific issues that the off-road community has brought up, because to them, they don't conceive of this as being an issue, right? They hear, hey, we can get a grant from the DNR to smooth out these trails. Oh, that's good, because people will be able to drive on them. It's off-road. They view that as being acceptable to the off-road community. Well, the reason they view it that way is because they're not off-roaders. They don't overland. They're not anything besides people who live on the island who occasionally use the trails to get out someplace for photography or a picnic or something like that. They're not out there because they enjoy the difficulty of the challenge. So that's background on the Drummond Island Off-Road Club. And they have someone who works with the DNR writing grants, right? So what that is the DNR has got a certain amount of money, and you can apply for it if you've got a club or something like that with some sort of authority over the area, such as Drummond Island Tourism Association. So, yes, I fully expect that at some point when all the FOIA requests go through and get returned, that, yes, Drummond Island Off-Road Club, as a part of Drummond Island Tourism Association, absolutely signed off on this. They assumed that the operators both knew what they were doing, and also that it was something that the community would appreciate, which is why they, you know, initially had, you know, no response for why people were upset. So I think, you know, that's the important background on Drummond Island Tourism Association and Drummond Island Off-Road Club. Looking into the future, they're supposed to hold board elections this year. So Drummond Island Tourism Association is in the charter for Drummond Island Off-Road Club is to operate it for 1 year. And at the end of that time period, they're supposed to hold elections for the board. Well, what we don't have is a clear path to membership for the Drummond Island Off-Road Club. So we don't know how do we join the Drummond Island Off-Road Club so that we can have voting rights to vote in people we want for the board. That's not clear. Right. And when I asked for clarity on that, I got a promise to get back to you. They haven't gotten back to me yet.
It'd be nice if they could model it kind of off the same path as like Friends of the Rubicon or the Rubicon Trail Foundation, where you don't, you know, there's a whole group of people around protecting the trails on the island, and they can be from anywhere in the state and be part of the whole program. But I think that the Drummond Island Tourist, what do they call themselves? DITA or whatever. I think they're going to have a hard time handing over the reins like that.
My prediction is that as well. This is purely off of feelings and vibes. Okay. This isn't based off of anything that I have information on or even conversations with people who know. My feelings and vibes is that the locals do not like the side-by-side community. They confuse it with the broader off-road community, lump us in together. We're the side-by-sides. Side-by-sides are drunks. They're loud and annoying, and they're driving way too fast. So the locals are fed up with it. They don't care, right? They're over it. They moved to Drummond because it's their little quiet place in the UP, which is fine, but that's – you can have your quiet place in the UP on your own private property. Drummond is something special for all Michiganders and the broader off-road community. So I think what's happening is because the board is comprised purely of the Drummond Island Tourism Association members who live on the island, are friends with other islanders, and are influenced by those people, I think their decisions are going to continue to be anti-off-road community until we start to both, A, hold them accountable, and then, B, get elected to that board so that we can start making sure that these kind of dog shit decisions aren't made anymore.
Right. Yeah. I mean, those are all valid points. I can't imagine a world where anyone on the island would think it's a good idea to destroy the steps. Like, the steps themselves, even if they weren't a off-road destination, they were beautiful on their own.
Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like and Joe, you can probably talk more about this, but I don't think they care that much.
No, so the older gentleman who had ran or supervised the club or whatever and then retired, he was saying that, you know, he was a jeeper. His grandfather started jeeping on Drummond Island. I mean, he's been doing it his whole life, and he's passed it down to his generations after him. He was really upset. Like, you could tell how upset he was given the circumstances of everything that happened. And it's too bad that there aren't more of him around to hold the key and keep an eye on things. So if they are going to keep their current management structure, I don't see things working out very well. And they need to keep in mind that that's not their land. It's just as much as the downstate people's land as theirs. It's state land. And, you know, I think getting some of us on the board would be a great thing. And I mean, you know, if we have to, I'll drive 4.5 hours up there to just help preserve it for future people to come. I mean, I went there, I think 4 or 5 times last year, and I went with my family in August, had a great time, just us. And the very last day, my wife was kind of over it, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, let's take one more ride. We'll go. It's raining. We don't want to pack up in the rain anyway, so let's just go for a little cruise. And we ended up at Marblehead, played around for a little bit, took a nice family photo on the steps. And that following week, is when we had the news of what happened. And,
right,
you know, it's such a, it was such, for me, it was just such a big blow to my heart. You know, it Drummond Island was a very special place. And then there's a lot of people now who never want to go back. And I mean, I could see it. I feel for them. And they, you know, I personally plan on going back. I still think that it's beautiful there. The trails are great. I mean, for now. And, I think, the people up there, the majority of them had nothing to do with it. So people are going, you know, well, let's not give them our money. Let's not give them our business. Well, the sweet lady at the gift shop didn't come out there with an excavator. She didn't pull out those steps. You know what I mean? The people who run the Northwood or pins, you know, they're not the ones behind this. And it's in, you know, part of it too, is like what else in driving distance is close enough to be worth it? You know, we don't have, we can go to Kentucky. We could go to the Keweenaw, which is double or triple the distance. And the Wheeling's not even as good.
We got Badlands.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. But, like, natural occurring features, you know, like, there's not a whole lot here. And Drummond Island was really special in that regard. Like, there wasn't anything else nearby that's even close. So I'm not sure that they realized at the time what they were actually doing. You know, they saw it as an ends to, you know, a means to an end as far as getting that equipment down there. And in the boulders that they place, nobody else talks about this. Like, my XJ on 33s could crawl over them, no problem. You know, it's not like they did anything that permanent. Like, anybody four beers deep in a shitty build can get over them. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying they should, but it's, you know, it's just they could have. I don't want to really get into like what they could have done or should have done, but they could have taken some.
That turned into.
They could have taken some trees and stacked up a bunch of logs over in front of it and kind of made a little fence, and that would have probably been more successful. I don't know.
I mean, they did that. Our local area we used to play in, called the Prairie. They did that around the entire racetrack, blocked it all off, and no one can get back there in anything now. I mean, it's a 10-foot high fence of trees and sticks. You can't get through it.
And, yeah, I don't know. It's just, to me, their whole destruction in the name of preservation thing is just so hypocritical. I even brought that up in the meeting. I said, you know, it's hard for people to come to your island and take the principle of tread lightly seriously when you guys are going out there with heavy equipment, bulldozing, you know, natural rock features, and then just tossing the remnants over in the tree line and just saying, fuck it, let's go get a beer, you know, at that point. Like, it's just,
yeah, and that
disgusting
that
how,
one, they especially seemed
how
to have
poorly
a problem
executed it was done.
They didn't seem to understand why that was so bad. You've got a pile of rock that's what, 15, 20 tons of rock that they didn't leave on the trail or off to the side of it. They pushed it straight into the woods that supposedly, like, hey, you guys can't go off trail, but we can push 15 tons of rock into the woods. That you're never going to get trees growing up for that in the next, you know, 15 years, 20 years. So it's really annoying to hear them say, oh, we can't do a bypass. And then just the same destructive effect of making a bypass. Like, so that's the really frustrating part. And, you know, some of the concerns looking forward, I highly encourage, and I'll post it on MST again. They, Drummond Island Off-Road Club, posted a map of future projects, right? And a lot of the future projects, they look pretty good. I think they're the yellow pens are what they're working on. A lot of them is on the ATV trails. And it looks like stuff that needs to be done, right? Like the grading on a bridge needs to be redone because the bridge is either sunken or the ground is sunk around the bridge where, you know, there's a foot gap to get on the bridge. That's good work, right? But then they start talking about tank traps and
The Walker Trail.
And the Walker Trail, you don't need to go down that. Like, there's no reason to go down that unless you want to go down the Walker Trail.
runs parallel with the road that kind of just is on the, it, there's like the main road and then there's like trails that kind of loop in and out of it. And there's no accessibility issues with the Walker Trail. It's stupid.
Yeah. So the frustrating thing with this is because they're not off-roaders, they believe that, hey, there's water on the trail that could be dangerous. We need to fix that. Well, no, signage can solve this problem, right? People can take personal accountability.
Right.
The sign says, hey, water can be 3 or 4 foot deep, right? Do not continue unless you're able to handle that. That solves the issue right then and there. So you don't have people surprised by that.
They could just post the picture of my 4Runner nose deep and just say, hey, here's a warning.
Well,
I mean, I know that was South Loop, but still.
The South Loop actually was addressed too. That used to be pretty much like, you know how like when you go back, obviously we didn't see this in April because it was completely underwater, but if you go in June,
right,
there's that middle section that you can kind of snake your way through all the really sketchy stuff back there. And that used to not be there. That was all sketchy territory until they went back there and enhanced it. So
yeah,
there's a lot of other things too. Like, you remember that section that goes around Connor's Hole? That was all rock.
Yeah, they blasted that. That used to have like 6 or 7 little ledges in that.
Yeah.
I know what that looked like beforehand, and that I was really excited to play in that section, and then it was just gone when we got up there.
So I think going forward, guys, what can you do if you listen to this and you're still upset about it? What can you do? Apparently the second Tuesday of every month, they are meeting. I am now on the email chain for the Drummond Island Off-Road Club community or whatever. So I'll be posting that on Mitten State Tours, Michigan Overlands. Whenever that meeting happens, I'll be posting that along with the map that they are, the projects they're discussing, so that you guys can tune in. I will say I am encouraged by a couple things, right? They seem easily influenced initially. I don't know if they're going to listen, but they did seem, I said, hey, as a makeup to the off-road community, would you consider talking to PJ Costa, who's the DNR trails expert for the Eastern, who's not our favorite person because he's ultimately the one responsible for Marblehead. But I said,
yeah, PJ
please
sucks.
Consider. Yeah. I'm not going to say anything personal about him. But I said, please consider talking to the DNR and opening up some of these ATV trails that are already wide enough to drive a vehicle on. Like, you go down there and when you look and, oh, that's an ATV trail. And it's like, is it though? Like, so I asked him, I said, go back to your DNR buddy and say, these trails are already wide enough. Like, open them up to vehicle usage so that more people can enjoy the rugged parts of the island. Right? If we're talking about accessibility, like, right? Everything's got to be accessible. Mm-hmm. What if I don't own a four-wheeler? What if I only own a truck? So they were actually pretty open to that idea. And the impression I got is they thought that was a good idea. So they took that and back, and they included that. Go ahead, Joe.
They wouldn't even have to do any work if they did it. If they just opened it up and, you know, said, you can drive on this now, smaller trucks are naturally going to go through it, and it will just slowly widen for wider trucks.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a couple spots where there's bridges or swamps that would have to be addressed, right? You'd have to get a grant to throw down, an I-beam bridge that can handle a full-size truck weight, because I think there's 2 or 3 bridges that are
right.
But those bridges are in disrepair already and need to be replaced. So why not prep that and have that ready for full-size vehicles? They are working on – so at the beginning of the year, I believe I shared – of 2024, I shared the a long poll or survey done by Drummond Island Tourism Association, basically saying, hey, here's what we want to see. Everyone got a chance to do it, from off-roaders to locals to whatever. So they've been going through that list of ideas. And remember, some of them are angry locals who basically say no off-roaders.
Right.
A lot of them were responses from the off-road community. They're going to start working on a few different things. So better campsites for dispersed camping. So whether that means, you know, maybe leveling out like the spots that we stayed, or adding fire rings, or going back there with a brush hog twice a year and brush hogging them. They don't really have what that's defined as. So we have an opportunity to go to these meetings and define, hey, what does a better dispersed campsite look like? You know, the suggestion for trash cans at the trailheads, that was one that I asked a lot of people to put in there. A lot of people did. And that's high on their list, right, is to get a dumpster or larger trash cans at trailheads. Because we all know if you're picking up cans, your trash crew is packed full by the end of a long day.
Right.
And I don't really want to carry somebody else's nasty beer cans around. I'd like to pick them up, but I don't want to carry them with me the whole trip. So I did ask for that, and it does look like they're pretty enthusiastic about that idea. The last thing
go ahead. It'd be nice if they'd add either more bathrooms or WAG bags.
They had proposed adding us another one too. I can't remember the location.
Because even if they just did, you know, maybe next to every trash can, they did a box of WAG bags or something. Just some way for people to be able to take care of it without all the freaking white flowers everywhere.
Yeah, so they did talk about the outhouse situation. This year, I think they're trying to get a double outhouse at Glen Cove instead of the single. And they're going to double the frequency of pumping on that. So last year, I think they pumped once a month. This year, they're going to do it twice a month. So they got grants for that. Then they're also working on getting outhouses at the rest of the trailheads, because I don't think all of the trailheads have outhouses. Like Penns, I don't think has an outhouse. Is that correct?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, you'd have to go into Penns, which isn't the end of the world, because like you stop in Penns, you grab a Coke or a Pepsi or whatever they have and some little swags. It's right. Actually kind of a nice thing for Penns, because you get people stopping in and buying some stuff. So, but they're working on outhouses right there. And then also getting a outhouse out to Fossil Ledges. That was on the list.
That's a good spot.
Yeah, they need it. There was some waste I've seen there before, and it's just I don't know why people can't take care of their own crap, man. They just leave it there, and everybody else has to look at it.
Yeah.
I went crap there once, but I at least buried mine.
I'm proud of you.
So I guess going forward, here's what I would say. If this is a subject that interests you, you know, make time to attend the meetings, read through the pre-brief, which is the map that they post, and understand what they're talking about, and then use this opportunity to influence them, because it seems like they're looking for leadership or someone to tell them what to do. Because right now they don't know what they're doing, and I think they understand they don't know what they're doing. I think they want to do what's right, but they don't know what's right. So get in there and make your voice heard.
Right.
Yeah, I had mentioned that if they're just pointing the finger at PJ Costa and they had nothing to do with it, that they need to have PJ a part of one of their meetings so we can direct our questions toward him. And they were open to trying to get him to do that. I mean, whether he does or not, I don't know. But I think they're not going to hear the end of the Marblehead fiasco for quite some time, especially looking back on everything after the meeting and like going over it in my head. There's so many indiscrepancies with their story. And yeah, there are a lot of back and forth. Well, you know, well, we didn't know about this. Well, actually, yeah, we did. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's only a matter of time before they're like, yeah, okay, we knew about it. Like, we had to get the equipment down there somehow. This was the only way we could think of how to do it. And I want to let them up for it, because they're, that wasn't the only way, but, you know, whatever.
I'm going to try and get in the meeting this next coming month. And one of the things I want to propose to them is I'd like these meetings to be recorded and put on YouTube or somewhere so that other people have a chance to look back at it.
I mean, I recorded because... a portion of it, and most of it was on the topic of Marblehead. And now, whether or not that was authorized, I don't care. But, yeah, I, right. I posted
I just, it. I'd like to see, for ease of access or, what's the word, transparency, yeah. I'd like to see the Drummond Island Off-Road Club do it on their own. I don't want us to have to, you know, babysit them to keep track of
some bootleg copy of the Drummond Island Off-Road Club meeting. But, I mean, that's what it was.
And, I mean, I'd even go as far as offering up a way to do it, you know, helping them get stuff set up, because that's just, to me, that's such an important piece of this, is that everyone can see what's going on.
Yeah, I think then, they're not. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so I'm looking through my, so I got the meeting minutes from Amy. So I'm just kind of looking through them, and like everything that we talked about, like they've got in their minutes that they're going to kind of work on it. They obviously don't have how, you know, the discussion around, hey, this is, you know, our anger, I guess. But yeah, so the meetings will be held on the second Monday of each month at 7 p.m.
That's, are you sure it's Monday?
Second Monday of each month at 7 p.m.
All right, because you said Tuesday a little bit ago, so just trying to clarify.
Yeah, I pulled up the email and checked.
Gotcha.
So the next one would be March 11th.
Yeah, I think
that sounds correct. Like, yep.
I think going forward, I mean, just the way this was all handled and how much hot water they got themselves into, I think they're going to be very apprehensive about doing. I mean, but the problem is the damage has already been done. But I think they're going to be very apprehensive about doing anything else, especially on that large of a scale. Now, I would like to address with them, what about the rest of the trail system that's become just a seasonal dirt road now at this point? Then it wasn't 2 years ago. Like, we were so focused on Marblehead that we didn't even bring that stuff up. Like, everybody was so hyper-focused on the Marblehead fiasco that we just kind of forgot about, like, the section that goes around Connor's Hole, or just pretty much all the trails in general, dude. Like, in 2023, it was littered with basketball-sized boulders everywhere. Like, slow crawling, you know, nice and easy trail. You know, you weren't gonna fly, you weren't gonna do Derek stuff going through them at 40 miles an hour, because you would have blown your front, you know, your front suspension out real quick, you know. And now they've opened it up for the side by side 60 miles an hour,
right? You boil a pot with a frog in it and he doesn't feel it till he dies, or something like that.
But I'm not sure what
they slowly boil the pot.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're
well, they slowly started taking trails away until suddenly they destroyed Marblehead. So before, no one really said anything. They were just kind of like, that sucks, that sucks, that sucks. Well, now I think they've hit that tipping point where people actually care now and they're going to pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, Derek, you remember in 23, like, it was just drastically different than when we went back in 24. It's just insane how much enhancing they did. And the issue is that all they did was open it up for high-speed side-by-sides to run through there 60, 70 miles an hour, and just the booze buggies, just let them fly. You know, before they weren't able to do that.
Yeah, so... on that note, two things I noticed during the meeting. So I did say, why are we not requesting more DNR supervision? The response to that was there's only two fish and game or wildlife officers in the Eastern UP. So they're stretched thin, which for me personally, I don't feel too bad about that. You know, I prefer not to have them in my hair. But the, you know, I said, hey, you guys have a serious problem with reckless driving and with drunk driving. And they agreed with that. But also, I noticed a couple of the older guys, I don't think they want to stop the drunk driving on the island. And
right,
I understand, like, hey, some of the guys like to crack a Coors Light and have a Coors while they're on the trail, have a trail latte, right? I get that. And it's like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the guys who've got six empties rolling around in their back seat and are obviously blindingly drunk, right? Like, that's an issue. But it didn't, you know, I think they paid lip service to that, but I don't think they're serious about actually stopping that. And something bad is going to happen. A side-by-side is going to come flying in and meet, you know, 6 tons of American steel.
Or Japanese.
Or Japanese.
Yeah, Japanese
steel. Well, Japanese would be like 3 tons, right? But, yeah, there's going to be an accident, and someone's going to die, and it's a lot more is going to get shut down. So it's like they need to start policing now before that happens. So, like, that's something like, hey, when you go to the meeting, like, talk about that. Talk about, hey, how do we control the side-by-side speeds? Like, should we put in some boulder-sized rocks to keep them moving slower?
Like that we're already there.
Right. But I think that at the end of the day, right, it comes down to go to the meeting, make sure you're heard, be loud about, hey, we want a formal process for joining the off-road club, right, because I don't want to get shut out in some sham election because nobody is allowed to join right. The club. Yeah. They didn't have formal membership roles, right? So I think those are the things we need to be loud about is one, we want to get people friendly to us on the board, which means that they have to really define that membership process and who gets voting rights. And then two is going in there and making sure that, hey, other people outside of the DITA group are looking at the projects and are ready with not only criticism, but solutions too. So if you don't like the way that they're doing something, come to them with a solution, because just telling them this is a dog shit idea, well, guess what that's going to end up with? They're going to do the dog shit idea because you didn't have a better idea. So come to them with a, hey, here's how to do this better. Hey, instead of dragging rocks down to Marblehead, why don't we just drill some holes and put a fence post? You could do that with a small piece of equipment or even by hand, right? Drill fence posts into the ground, and then you don't have to worry about it for the next 15 years. So that's
just put down some spike strips.
Right. But the point is look at the proposals and then come ready with alternatives that aren't, you know, stupid.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is that there was no transparency before any of this happened. It just happened. And, you know, I don't think that they kind of were thinking about, like, hey, this is everybody's land, not just ours. This isn't just our island's land. This is the whole state right. owns this. We pay more taxes to own it than they do. If you look at the grand scheme of the population, right. I mean, you know, and it, I don't know the whole, and then, so this is something we could talk about, the whole Pittman-Robertson Act provisions. Tom Craig, the president of Great Lake Four Wheel Drive Association, said that there's zero Pittman-Robertson Act land on Drummond Island. So that was cited, I believe, in PJ Costa's response email. So I'm not sure. And then Tom said he dug a lot into it, and he's more knowledgeable than anybody. Honestly, he probably would be somebody who could shed some more light on this than any Derek or myself, but I'm sure he's a busy guy. But anyway,
I had not even thought about reaching out to Tom, but that's a really good idea.
Tom Craig.
Yeah.
I can do that for next.
Yeah.
Month.
I've got some communications with him. We talked after that meeting for a while, Tom and I did. You know, I'm generally sympathetic to what Tom's trying to do. I don't buy that, you know, he pretty explicitly said that, you know, DITA or Drummond Island Off-Road Club didn't have anything to do with that. That yeah. I don't buy, but the rest of his, you know, kind of the rest of the stuff that he talked about, I'm pretty on board with. And I'll share some of that with you, Alex, so you can pop it up on your podcast page. Or I don't even know how to listen to a podcast. What do I do? Just Google Podcast.
I'll help you on Friday. Google Podcast should work if it's still around. I think they got rid of it.
Well, I'll just Google the word podcast and figure it out from there.
Yeah, the Fountain app works, Spotify works.
I just always click the links that you share and just listen to it that way.
I mean, that works too. As long as Gavin remembers to make the links, because he seems to be forgetting that lately.
Where is Gavin? Where are the other Botches bros?
Gavin, when we started, Gavin was still at work, and Mark is probably also still at work.
But yeah, so I guess in summation, they point the finger at the DNR. They claimed to have no knowledge of what was going on, but they had knowledge of the equipment going back there and the equipment needing to destroy the mini steps to get back there, but they claim they had no idea about the actual steps. And get involved, figure out how we can prevent these things from happening in the future. I'm not even going to name the features, but there's still other things there that are subject to enhancing, and we don't want that to happen. Yeah. So we need to put the,
I saw some of them, and
we need to put the pressure on, like Derek said, clear path to membership.
Yep.
Fair, honest election for the board and solutions. They have these projects in mind. If you don't agree with the way that they need that they're going to approach it, think about a way to approach it better. You know,
is the Drummond Island Off-Road Club part of the Michigan the Off-Road Association or whatever? Because isn't that made up by a bunch of clubs?
No, they're not part of Great Lakes Four-Wheel Drive. They're literally, dude, they are just a shell. They are a website with no members behind it.
Yeah.
There's no club events. It's all through DITA. The people who run DITA run Drummond Island. It's just a mask worn by Drummond Island Tourism Association. That's literally all it is.
So they
want to change that. They want to change that, supposedly. But again, let's see how these elections go.
Well, and when you brought up the whole booze buggy problem, we want people to still have fun out there and not have to worry about getting tickets, but we want people to be safe. And now when you think about that, the people, like you said, Drummond Island Off-Road Club is DITA. These guys are the people that own the resorts. They want these, because the side-by-side guys that go down there, they don't camp. They go stay at these resorts. You know what I mean? They want them to keep coming. And I think maybe that's kind of part of the whole angle that they're playing, is that they're trying to make things more fun for the side-by-side community, because they're the ones that go down there and rent their lodging and everything like that, and eat all their meals at the bar, like pins that whole resort and stuff. You know, it's, you'll see nothing but side-by-sides parked in the parking lot and in the big trailers and stuff across the street. So it's kind of interesting now that you think about it like that. I don't know. Maybe there's more to it.
Yeah. Well, on that note, this was good. There's a lot of information I didn't know there that we could, it's good for listeners to get to hear that. But definitely, I think we need to find out what the route to access for Drummond Island Off-Road Club is going to be. Because until we can get people in there that actually care, I don't see anything changing.
Do you want to talk about some Mitten State Tours events coming up while we're here for the listeners?
You know what? Right, let's do that.
So Sunday, this Saturday, MST Range Day. We've got the dog party. That's March 15th. Joe and Dirk's birthday bash, Rocks and Valleys. That's gonna be
lit.
10 a.m. Yeah, come on.
We rented the whole park out.
Yep.
We're working with West Michigan Off Road and the Michigan Bronco Club.
Yep. Riggs and Coffee kicks off Sunday, March 23rd. April 27th.
Jesus, it's already almost Riggs and Coffee time.
Yep. April 27th is Riggs. May 25th is Riggs. All right. Then we got an MST event. May 31st through June 1st, Spring Shakedown. Come shake down your springs.
Who's that at, Joe?
June. Fox Lake. Fuchs. Fax. F-O-C-H-S Lakes.
I'm just trying to get him to mispronounce that.
I know.
How do you say it?
Fox Lakes.
Fox Lakes. yeah, I didn't want to say it like that, you know. Well, I guess I already dropped an F-bomb on here.
Oh, dude, we swear all the time on here. You're good.
Thursday, June 5th through June 8th. This is a big one. MST invades Leatherwood. Leatherwood is Kentucky's newest premier off-roading destination. It should be a blast. Make sure your rigs are ready, though. Don't come down there with don't pull an Alex and come down there and have to put two quarts of gear oil in your rear diff and no spare tire.
Hey, I didn't pop a tire.
I know, your frame is held together by baling wire and a stake you found on the side of the road.
No, it was he ratchet strapped the body to the frame when he was there.
To be fair, when we left for Drummond Island, I knew that there was a small hole in the back of my frame. It was like penny sized. By the third day, it was just the whole frame was gone in the back.
Drummond will do that to you.
Well, so for Leatherwood, we're going to be 8-9 hours away. Have some spare parts, you know, have a spare tire, some spare parts, and then I'll have a trailer. If worst case scenario, I need a trailer, you do a shop or something. But I mean, you know, these things can be prevented. Have some cheap Rock Auto ball joints, have some tie rods, have some CV axles. If you have a solid axle, have some, you know, spare axle shafts.
Oh,
you know.
On that note, I'll drop it in the Leatherwood chat. We do have a spreadsheet about spare parts. It's a Google Doc. People are contributing what spares they're bringing with the hopes that, you know, if you break something, you at least know who to go to. You know who to go to, and also that you can kind of plan better. Hey, maybe if six people are bringing CVs, maybe don't buy a CV, maybe get a ball joint or something like that.
That and tools, Derek. Yeah, that might be a good thing to add to the spreadsheet is what tools.
Yeah, the batches are coming. They got their tool trailer.
Well, you know, like
we're building a tool trailer.
You know, like it just when I went down to Drummond for MST, I brought the freaking kitchen sink with me, man. I had ball joint presses, front ends, suspension kits. I had everything with me.
We're gonna have ball joint presses. We're gonna have a shop press for changing wheel bearings. Everything. I mean, we're building a mobile shop.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it might be.
The batches are like, I know how to get invited to every exclusive event.
well, you know what I mean, though. Like, it might be good just to like know what other people. Just not everybody knows the Botches Bros, you know what I mean? So, like, if you've got some new guy, this is his first MST trip, and he's wondering what tools to bring, he could have that. Even if Alex lists everything he's going to bring, that way they know. So, anyway, Leatherwood, we have Spring Kids Camping. That's June 20th to the 22nd up in Grayling. Friday, July 18th, Western UP Exploration Trip. Now, these trips are always a lot of fun. The wheeling isn't necessarily really technical, but you get really cool campsites, and it's always a good crew of people.
Yeah. A note on that one. That one is going to fill up really fast because, like, I'm not trying to drag 20 trucks behind me. I've done that, and it's just a challenge, right? So if I get – once I get to 12 or 14 trucks, I'm going to ask for volunteers – and I'll drop you the South Shore route that we did last year. If you want to be a leader, you'll get the really cool campsites, directions to the largest cave in Michigan that's pretty well hidden, all the ruins that we explored, all that fun stuff. You'll get basically a pre-made awesome trip that you can enjoy. And I think the route was pretty cool. I mean, a little more pavement than I wanted.
The Thunderbolt. The Thunderbolt was sweet.
Thunderbolt was sick. But yeah, so once that fills up, if somebody wants to lead another group, I will drop you just a pre-made trip where basically you just have to download the GPX and herd some cats.
So then,
yeah.
And if you need, I obviously want to do the Western UP exploration with you, but if you need another group for that, I'll be willing to lead that.
I've already got
Saturday,
you, Gamboni.
August.
I also.
Huh?
Say, I also should be able to lead that if you need someone.
So we got August 9th through August 11th. I'm going to be running a crew up to Drummond. We'll be doing the big campsite that we usually use. In August, it probably will be pretty brushy, but, you know, you get what you get. I think the first day of that I go up Thursday night. I don't expect everyone to be able to pull that off, but Friday is when we do our first smaller trail ride when not everybody has shown up yet, and we usually go back, pick people up for Marblehead at night, the Sunset Marblehead Jamboree. But anyway, I plan on doing the more technical trails that are more time consuming Friday, as opposed to trying to run them with everybody Saturday. Last time we did that on Saturday, there were some people who weren't really ready for that, so they had to kind of wait for us at the end of the trail, and we had some vehicles that needed a lot of recovery in the Titan Twisties, and I kind of felt bad for the guys that were just waiting for us. So we're going to do more technical stuff Friday. Saturday we'll do the Marblehead Loop and then make our way through Connor's Hole and take the easy way, I think, to Fossil. Then anyway, after that we got Craig is leading Convoy up to the 7-hour plane crash to Core. Friday, September 12th through the 14th is the fall kids camping in Grayling. And that's all I have available on MST's site. I mean, obviously there's rigs and coffee sprinkled in.
I just got a note. It's not live quite yet, but MintonStateTours.com, hopefully by this weekend, will be live. For those who don't have Facebook, you'll be able to.
Hell yeah.
You'll be able to see all of our events. It'll be a space for not only events, but for all of our discount codes in one place for friends of MST. So Botches Off Road, it'll have links in there to our friends' podcasts, our friends' shops that we frequent, products that we use, so on and so forth. So that is coming hopefully this weekend if Corey's not too sick and can get that done.
That is going to be sick. I won't have to get on Facebook all the time.
The website is also going to transition straight into the merch seamlessly.
Yep.
Like Steve Jobs would have done. I kept saying that all the time. Anyway, and then we've got some new hats that we're going to put out for MST pretty soon.
Ooh, the hats are sick. Like,
yeah,
this hat's pretty cool, but the ones that Yammer's got are dope.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. I want to do like a older retro style like trucker hat with like a real thick rope with the MST patch
on
it. I think that would be sweet too. I have to get my mom working on that and my wife. But that's all I have for events. If you're listening,
I want to see a coon hat.
Yeah, I don't know how we would press onto a coon hat, but plus like.
Well, yeah, you'd have to do embroidery.
Obviously, everybody's free to buy their own coon hats, but you know, I like to give them to people who I feel earn one. Like. JD, I gave her a coon hat after she was a really good sport about being stuck in the Titan Twisties. I wasn't going to bring her name up, but she was the vehicle we had to recover quite frequently in Titan Twisties, and I gave her a coon hat after that because she was a really cool sport about it.
She told us.
I thought the coon hat was for the flood support or the hurricane relief.
No. When she came and dropped your trailer off at my house, they hijacked my coon hat. And stole it.
That's
and
right.
Held it for and held it for ransom. I got mine back, and then I gave her a TMU one for being a good sport about essentially having to wench like every 30, 40 yards. But
that's right.
She told us that story on her episode.
How many university have you interviewed?
You two and JD. I think you just
need to start interviewing someone from MST every night, just like a 20-minute interview.
Oh my god.
Start with Zerk.
A good one to be.
That'd be a
maybe double them up too. Like if you had like Craig Borland and Casey Wagner. I mean, those guys are really, really, really knowledgeable. Yeah. Their rigs are super
Craig
built. They're,
and
they're
Zach. Great.
The ultimate showdown. Well, they're so polar opposites on the spectrum.
You know,
I don't know. But Casey's super knowledgeable. He's been out west. Craig as well. I mean, they're both great guys to pick their brains on things from.
Yep. I've been wanting to get Casey on. I just haven't actually reached out because we always have something that week coming up.
Dude, start doing like 20-minute mini episodes because. Like, yeah, you talk to people like Craig and Casey who've done some really cool stuff. Or, like, you could do a YouTube episode with, like, Scott from Trail Expedition and then Corey. You know, that you can do a YouTube, like, what is YouTube? Anyway, yeah, we're getting off topic here. I'll bring it back in. We're almost up to an hour.
Yeah, we're just about done.
Jackson Rabar would be a good one to talk to, too, because he's got a lot of knowledge as far as overlanding, but he also has a lot of like knowledge as far as like the inner workings of General Motors, which is pretty cool if you pick his brain on some of that.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, shout out to all those guys.
Or, there's lots of people.
Yeah, shout out to all those guys. Or Mario, he could talk to you for 2 hours about each and every one of his vehicles. He's got more rigs than I do, I think. Yeah, he's got the.
Oh, we also we had Patrick Kissman.
Oh yeah.
Oh, with that sick first gen. Yeah, that 4Runner is sweet, for sure. I've never seen it in person. But
it's not a 4Runner. It's not even a 4Runner. It's a truck with a 4Runner welded to the back.
Yeah, I mean, it looks just like a 4Runner. It's awesome.
It's so cool.
I'm on the list of if he ever sells that thing. Let me know.
It rides surprisingly well. Yeah, it's very comfortable ride.
Yeah, he drives it up from like Kansas to visit his folks. Like,
yeah,
something being like that built. That's pretty impressive. Like the XJ, I couldn't drive it to pick my kids up from school, let alone four states away. Or however many.
Yeah, he came over when he was up here last. It was, man, that thing's cool.
Yeah, I'm all about all right, guys, about quantity that's... over quality. I just have a lot of rigs, not one cool one.
I have neither quality or quantity, so I have two rigs, and they're both in varying stages of disrepair. One that runs, and one that doesn't. Yeah. So,
and then you get in Derek's plush Lexus that's got vibrating, warm, heated steering wheels. And, you know, like that one time when we were going campsite scouting and you threw me up to the ceiling. But, like, I was so surprised.
I coached you off that roof, baby.
Yeah, dude, but I was so surprised how, like, nice it was in there. I'm like, dude. And it's, what, almost 20 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, those Lexuses are nice for sure. It's kind of a weird dynamic when you're like doing rugged hardcore off-road stuff but you're sitting inside of a nice plush Lexus.
Yeah, we might be buying a new rig as a daily here soon, and it's going to be the same kind of thing. Very plush inside and very rugged everywhere.
What do you think
it's we'll talk about it when we're not recording, because I don't really want to put it out yet in case it doesn't
understandable
happen.
Word. All right, fellas, I have to.
It's a, wait, I know what it is. I know what it is. You're getting a Terrain AT4.
Dude, that's dead on. How did you guess that? All right, well.
All right, see ya.
Catch you guys later.